Everyone, welcome back to Who's There. I'm your host, Allison. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. This is a podcast where I talk to a new horror fan every week because I hope to destigmatize what it means to be a horror movie fan, because most of us are just regular people who like the adrenaline rush of being scared for some reason, and here we delve into those reasons. I'm so excited because this week we have sci-fi and horror writer Tim Ahrens on the show. He told me all about the second book in his Dark Creatures series and the dark, intricate plot. You won't want to miss this. He told me how he got into horror around age 10, his love for Universal monster movies, and why Gen Zers, and probably me, need to give the black and white horror classics a chance. He also told me how he got prepared to get inside the mind of one of his characters, who is a complete psychopath, and why he thinks that horror fans are also more grounded in tense situations. One last thing before we get into this episode, if you love the show and haven't left us a review on iTunes yet, I'd be so grateful if you could take a second to rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to us. Thank you to everyone who's already left us a review. It's so appreciated as it really helps people to find us. I think I've rambled enough, so let's get into this episode with Tim Ahrens. Hey Tim, how are you?
I am doing well. Thank you for having me on, Allison. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for being here. Do you want to start by telling everyone a little bit about yourself, where you're from, et cetera?
Yes. So my name is Tim Ahrens. I'm from Madison, Wisconsin. I've been writing since I was 14, so over 40 years. I write dark fantasy novels. I also have a book of short stories called The Salvation of Tanglegel. You can find all of this on my website at www.thedarkcreatures.com. or on Amazon, if you look me up. I also have two more books out. One is Dark Creatures, A Simple Game, and the other one is book two of that series, which is Dark Creatures, The Grand Game.
That's awesome. So we will talk about your books in a little while, but first things first, what's your favorite scary movie?
Holy, my favorite horror movie right now is Scary Stories Best Told in the Dark.
Do you mean Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark?
Tell in the Dark, yeah. Yeah, it's an anthology story. It's about a ghost that writes stories in a book.
The Alvin Schwartz.
Yeah. Yep.
Awesome. I love those books. I have those. One of my friends gave me copies of them a couple of years ago. Awesome. Why is that one your favorite?
Out of all the ones I've seen recently, it's the most unique. It's really well done. The show is really well produced. The acting is spot on, fairly decently done. The build-up to the end is fantastic. The ending is well-written. It's fantastic. There's enough suspense in the show to keep you on edge and glued to your TV.
Awesome. So how did you first fall in love with the horror genre and, you know, horror literature?
Oh, God, I fell in love with that when I was 10. I started watching that stuff with my father at 10. We started watching. We usually take Friday nights or Saturday nights off. We'd sit down, we'd watch the old Universal monster movies, like Frankenstein or Dracula or the Wolfman. And we ended up watching those. And since they were more sympathetic towards the monsters in a lot of different cases, we'd end up, after the movie, talking about this or that, or why the monster was this, or what happened to him that way, or how cruel society was. And then that's which, of course, started me reading. And I started quite a bit with Edgar Allan Poe. And I moved into Stephen King. Larry Niven's got a bunch of good books out there. There's a whole bunch of stuff I've read over the years, along with fantasy, of course.
So why do you think that people who seem perfectly sane love the horror genre?
It's the excitement. It's people love to feel safe and yet scared. No one wants to be scared in a real situation. It's not fun at all.
Yeah.
But if you could sit down and imagine yourself, like in, say, by dark fantasy novels, for instance, you imagine yourself in a situation that will frighten you, but now you have a possibility of being a hero, or you can actually take charge or do something that you know you could never do in real life. You'd end up running. a good example of that would be, I don't know how many people actually saw these commercials, but there was a Geico commercial out there for Halloween that played on that, where you had a bunch of teenagers being chased by a chainsaw wielding maniac. Let's go into the barn with all the chainsaws. No, let's go into the car that's not running. So it's a fun genre if you know you're safe in the back of your head. And that's what I think is the appeal to horror. Is on one side, it's fun to know that you can feel, you know, that scared or that nervous and still know you're safe. And on the other side, in some cases, like when I write, it's also fun to be the villain. Because you know you're never going to do anything of this except in imagination, and that's where the fun part comes from.
Who's your favorite horror villain?
Oh, God, I got a lot of favorite horror villains. I would have to say Prince Prospero from The Mask of the Red Death with Vincent Price.
Oh, I've never heard of that or seen it, so I will have to look that up.
I would suggest you do. If once you've seen what Prince Prospero is like, you'll see why he's my favorite villain.
Okay, awesome. So what scares you nowadays in film and in real life?
Scaring me is kind of really hard these days. I like a good ghost story that can add suspense. I like the genre, but I'm not really big into the axe murders or the slasher films. Mm-hmm. That won't scare me very much. It's fun to watch for the excitement value and stuff like that, or for the people sitting around you when you point at the screen going, they're dying next, they're going to use the axe to get drives people crazy. Let's see. A good suspense film or horror film, like a ghost story or something like that, will always catch my attention. As long as it's well written. Was it? I can't think of his name off the top of my head.
Guillermo del Toro.
There you go.
Yeah.
Del Toro. There we are. He just came out with Cabinets of Curiosity on Netflix. Most of those are really good. I really enjoy a good Night Gallery. I don't know if you're not familiar with any of the classics.
No, I'm really not.
I'm really, really big into the Twilight Zone, the old black and white Twilight Zone.
I do like that. Yeah.
I love Rod Serling's writings. I think he was a master writer. I kind of wish he'd lived longer. I love Night Stalker with Darren McGavin. As I said, I've get into a lot of the classics. What really scares me in real life is that someone like my villain in my books, Doug Pimkin, could actually be alive or exist.
So last May, you released a book called Dark Creatures, The Grand Game on mm-hmm. Atmosphere Press. Can you tell me about it and tell me about your villain?
Oh, definitely. Grand Game is the second book in the Dark Creatures series. It takes place after the establishment of two people in the first game, the first book or the first game. The Grand Game is basically a game of gods. Gods that have been forgotten over history or no longer worshipped. They're in their own little dimension because they can't really affect the world to any extent anymore because there are other powers out there that don't want them to do that. So what they do is they decide they play little games. They choose people at random in the close proximity, and then they'll play a game of chess, or they'll play a game of good versus evil or something like that, just so that they're not noticed by the general public or they're not discovered. For instance, well, when the Grand Game, the simple game, which was the first book, started that way. The Grand Game means that they have a possibility of being discovered. This is not good. So what these guys now have to do is expand this game to the point where they can make it all look like a series of coincidental events. So they have to bring more players into the game. More gods can enter the game. The game gets larger. It gets more complex. And then at the end of the game, they can wipe the whole thing out. A good example of that, of a grand game, would be, as I put in one of my books, it would be Roanoke. If you've ever studied Roanoke, Virginia, you'll find in 1863, they established a colony there of 150 people. 1865, when they came back to check on them, there was not a soul left. Buildings still there, half of them taken apart, not a soul remained. So the grand game takes place with five players instead of two, which is in the first book. And then things get way out of hand because I add Cthulhu mythos into the book. I usually write dark fantasy, so it's fantasy horror based. The gods that are taking place that are playing the game as puppeteers are Circe, that's the goddess of magic in Greece mythology. You have the Januses, which is the god of present, gods of present, past, present, and future, which in the Romans are Romans. There's the Egyptian god of chaos, and then there's I Am, which is a Cthulhu mythos god that I created. These are all controlling human characters in the real world. Then those human characters, thus, are now controlling characters in a fantasy world they think they're playing a video game of. So it's a really complex plot.
Yeah. Where'd you come up with the idea for it?
There were kind of several different atmospheres or points that got me. One, the idea of the video game controlling people in real life through a video game came from ESO, Elder Scrolls Online.
Okay.
I used to play that quite a bit. And when I was playing that game one night, I was thinking, you know, what if this person, this character I created actually wasn't just a character? What if I'm actually directing this person in the real world? That thought hit me really fun. The fantasy-based point from the horror came from an anime I love to watch. It's called Berserk.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever seen that one. It's a swords and sorcery type anime where you're in an apocalyptic world and the main character, who's a swordsman, ends up trying to survive, basically, in a world full of monsters and demons that are always after him to try to kill him. So I tweaked that a little bit from the fantasy point in. I took the male swordsman out and I made the swordswoman. Her name is Augury Parse. And then I gave her a partner, which is Lilica Trevelyan. She's a bard. But the people who exist within the fantasy world of dark creatures are not necessarily just human. So these characters are all anti-heroes. They're all doing the right thing for the wrong reasons. So I could say, so since we're into book two, Augury, for instance, is a wraith. She's a spirit, possessive spirit, and Lilica is a succubus. Then you have my human characters who think they're actually playing these video games that are being played by the gods. So that would be William. He's just a high schooler. You have Doug Pimpkin. He's a psychopath. And when I say he's a psychopath, I mean I wrote him as a psychopath. I did quite a bit of studying of Dean, John Wayne Gacy, Ted Bundy. I did a lot of studying on the myth. The psychology and the way that all works in the sociopath into psychopath situation. So yeah, when you read Doug, you're not going to like him at all.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how you got into the mind to write that character who's a psychopath, but that makes total sense. Was it like a dark place to come out of every time you stopped writing that character? Did you have to like watch a comedy or something?
Good point, but it does make you feel nervous at times.
Yeah, I'm sure.
When I write, I visualize. So okay. Even though I'm walking around in the skin of, say, Doug Pimpkin, who's a psychopath, I'm actually watching it as I'm watching a movie.
Okay.
So it's easy to detach myself afterwards because it stays in the book. I can shut the book off and move on to something else.
Yeah. Oh, okay, cool.
So that's what a lot happens when, since I write a lot visually, I write quite a bit in visually. So when you read my books, you'll be getting an up close and personal look at what's going on through the eyes of the character.
Is there, since this is the second book in the series, do you anticipate there being a third book?
Oh, yes. I'm going to start writing that in January. I've been spending some time publicizing or trying to get in the books right now. I've already started the third book. It's called Dark Creatures, Worlds Unending. If I get enough support, I'll probably write a fourth book. Otherwise, I'll move on to another character in the Dark Creatures series and start over again.
Oh, that's so cool. It sounds like a very intricate plot. I have a friend who really likes anime and horror, so I will tell her about these books.
Make sure you mention one that she'll probably really enjoy if she has to see. It's called Another.
Okay. Yeah,
it's a very unique plotline.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I definitely will. So what is your favorite subgenre in horror movies? You said ghosts, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's ghosts. As far as subgenres go, I love ghosts, I love monsters, and I love demons. They're all easily played with. You can have lots of fun with what made this person a ghost or how they react to people. Same thing with a monster, like when you watch Frankenstein, is a monster evil or is he just misunderstood?
Yeah.
Demons, you can have a lot of fun with too, because you can change scenarios with a demon. For instance, there was a game I was playing out there for a while called Neverwinter, but they ask you to write plot lines for sometimes. And I came up with a plot line with a friend of mine about a demon who fell in love with a human who got taken away by her father, another demon, because he didn't like the union. So the human enlists you, the adventurer, to go find her, not telling you that she's a demon. He just says, well, my wife has been taken away. So you can play around with situations like that all sorts of ways. It's really fun.
That's super cool. So you're also big into playing horror video games, it sounds like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a lot of fun with that too, yeah.
Nice. Are there any that are actually scary?
Oh, God, let's see. Silent Hill actually really is a great game when it comes to the creeps. It'll definitely give you the creeps. The writers do a great job, like Revelations, I think, or when you were the soldier in the game. I can't remember exactly what the name of the Silent Hill version of that was, but you come up to a door and you're talking to some person behind the door that you don't see for hints, and she sounds like she's this really creepy person. It's really fun. The Silent Hill games, they did a great job with those.
What do you think of the movies, the Silent Hill movies?
Do you want my honest opinion?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm a little disappointed. I thought that the whole witch coven thing and stuff like that was overused.
Okay.
When they decided to do that. Now, this is my own, mind you, my own opinion. I don't want to offend anyone who loves those movies. I apologize if I do. I thought they could have been a wider scope. I thought they could have done a better job, than, like I did in the video games, a much wider scope. The only problem I had with the big problem I had with the first one was that they did the same. They had the same mistake that I've run into occasionally. They wrote a character so well that when they finally decided to try to get rid of that character, they did it in the worst possible way.
Okay.
Have you seen the first film?
I haven't. I can never find it streaming anywhere, and I haven't wanted to rent it yet. So that is
okay.
On
Would
my
you
list.
Like me to tell you what I'm talking about as far as
characters
go?
No.
Okay.
Don't spoil.
Okay. All right. That's why I thought I'd ask.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. The movie looks really creepy and atmospheric, so I'm looking forward to watching it. But I've also never played the game. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, the atmosphere, the special effects are all great. The acting is really well done. I just thought that the people who wrote the plot could have expanded it a little bit more than what they did.
That makes sense.
That's the writer in me.
Of course. So who are your favorite horror directors and horror writers?
I like King. King's really good. Del Toro is one of my favorites. He does a fantastic job with his horror genres. Clive Barker is really fun with the Hellraiser series is also really fun. As far as directors go, unfortunately, I don't know a lot of them. I know a lot of titles, but I don't know a lot of directors. I know Del Toro because I've seen several of his movies and he stands out.
Yeah.
Especially, and I just saw Cabinets of Curiosity, which also brings him to mind. So.
Yeah, totally. I haven't watched that yet. I've only seen one. I've seen Pan's Labyrinth and I've seen... He worked on Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Yes.
Did he direct it?
Yes. I think he directed it, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So those are the only two movies of his that I've seen. I liked Scary Stories. I did not like Pan's Labyrinth. Do not come for me, internet. But so I haven't watched Cabinet of Curiosities yet because I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to like it.
It's a mixed bag. It depends on who wrote the short stories. Some of them make a lot of sense and are fun. And some of them you're kind of going, why did they end it that way? But you know, that's with any story that you work on. Sometimes it'll click and sometimes it won't.
Right.
I would recommend that you're a big horror fan. I would definitely recommend you go back and watch Night Gallery. It was done in the late 70s, early 80s. That's when I saw it. It was done when Serling was still alive. So that had to have been the 60s, but
yeah.
It does the same thing. Del Toro's work for Cabinet of Curiosities was more of a homage to Night Gallery. I don't know if you read that particular part from his interviews. Mm-hmm. Night Gallery starts with Rod Serling telling you an introduction to a painting. And then the painting goes into the story. It's actually really well done.
Okay, cool. Yeah, maybe I'll just give the first one a try and see.
Sure, definitely. Yeah.
So an article came out in 2020 that said that horror movie fans were handling lockdown better than non-horror movie fans. Why do you think that was the case?
We're not necessarily afraid of the future so much that a lot of people are. Horror fans tend to face their fear more than a lot of other people do. And the lockdowns all, to me at least, since I'm a big horror fan, always seem more like surreal. It's more like you've seen it in the movie. You know, so this big pandemic, there were several people, for instance, I talked on Facebook who were waiting for the next zombie apocalypse. So yeah, although people took the COVID seriously, they didn't really take the whole situation, I should say, panicked seriously. That's how I would put it. They have more of a grasp on, if it doesn't come after me directly, I'm going to wait and observe like I do with my horror movies and see what happens.
Totally.
So I think they're more grounded. Horror movie people, or people who love horror, are more grounded in that type of situation. As I said, in real life, you're going to respond differently to situations you would when you're watching a horror film. But since there was no, how do I put this? When you're watching a horror film, there's an immediate threat. There's always an immediate, whether it be a viral threat or a monster threat. COVID was almost, as I said, almost surreal. All you got from it, you could catch it, true, but all you got from it was the news, what the news was telling you, or what someone else was. You didn't really have a whole lot of firsthand experience with it unless you got it, or unless it you contracted with it. So it's almost like it was surreal, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
How do you feel about it?
I feel like horror movie fans were just like, there are no zombies. Nobody's trying to kill me. So I can just stay home and watch horror movies. This is great. And I think we expose ourselves to a lot of situations that are way worse than just having to stay inside. Not saying that people dying in great numbers isn't terrible, but like you said, it's until it affected you personally, it was just something you saw on the news.
Yeah, we tend to be homebodies.
So how do you decide what horror movie to watch when you're just hanging out and looking for something to watch?
I'll scan a whole bunch of stuff, and what plot strikes me is the one I'll watch. I don't start out looking for something. I'll plug something like horror into Netflix or something like that, and I'll pan down to see what grabs me. A good example of that was Jeepers Creepers. It was something that just grabbed me at one point. I don't know if you ever saw that movie or not.
Yeah, I did.
I'm taking that genre into account. Jeepers Creepers 2 is the best. One is okay. Its ending was a little, as I said before, like Dotoro was a little, why did they end it that way? But 2 is the best. 2 is fantastic. The ending is just great.
Are there any horror movies that you won't watch or that you won't watch ever again?
Oh, well, it's not really a horror movie per se, but I won't watch From Dusk Till Dawn, for instance.
How come?
That's a prejudice on my part, unfortunately. Back when it first came out in the theaters, my brain's failing me. What the director was, I can't think of his name off the top of my head. Oh, well, it'll come to me. The director came out and said that it was a very serious,
Tarantino.
Tarantino, thank you very much. Came out and said it was a very dark, very serious horror movie done in the classic style. So I went in there all revved up for that. It's not what it is.
I've never seen it because it looks like an action movie and it doesn't look like.
It's more of a spoof.
Okay.
It's more of a spoof on horror films. Okay. So when I went in there all excited about that, that's what I got. In which case I hit the floor really hard with that one. I was really upset. I won't go back to see that one, for instance. I like Tarantino's work, though. Don't get me wrong. He does a really nice job of the Hateful Eight, for instance. It's funner than Hack, but I don't want to disparage his name or anything like that.
Have you ever had any noteworthy experiences seeing a horror movie in theaters?
I've seen drive-ins. I've had fun noteworthy experiences seeing stuff in drive-ins when I was a kid, which is how old I am. For instance, the first time that they showed Friday the 13th, the original movie, mm-hmm. We were sitting in a car with a bunch of friends of mine, and I was driving them insane with that because I'd say, well, this person is about to be killed with this axe in 5 minutes. Wham! This is about to be killed with this bit in 10 minutes. Wham! It got to the point where my friends were starting, shut up! Just shut up! Just quit talking! let's see. I had some great times with that stuff.
Sounds like it. Yeah. What has your favorite horror movie been so far that you've seen in 2022?
I still think the Scary Stories one I mentioned would be the most. I haven't seen any up to date horror films recently yet, and I haven't caught a lot that have really grabbed me in 2022. Horror series, as I said, Del Toro series of Cabinets of Curiosity. I don't mean to keep mentioning it. Was fair. That's the most modern one I've seen so far. I'm more into the classics, or I go back into 2018 or 2019 or something like that. But I haven't seen any 2022 stuff. There were a couple that I have seen that I could recommend, or at least look into anyway. Okay. Mr. Harrigan's Phone.
Oh yeah, I did like that.
That was a lot of fun. I want to see Black Phone. I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I really want to see that one.
Yes, I did see that. It was good, but it's not that scary. So
that's true. From I actually like the way they wrote it. Okay. From the commercials I've seen, the premise is fantastic. Just from the imagination of the way they wrote it with the phone and then the ghost talking to the kid through the phone. That was fantastic. That was funner than heck.
Have you read Joe Hill's story that it's based on?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. I think you can, if you just search it, you can find a PDF of it online. Google.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. I think it's only like 11 pages or something like that.
Oh, it's a short story then.
Yeah, it's a short story. Yeah. Are there any horror movies that you like that people generally don't like?
Unfortunately, the younger, and I can say this because I'm 57, but the younger generation doesn't have, in my personal opinion, an appreciation of the black and whites, the 40, 30s, 40s, 50s. Mm-hmm. In a lot of cases, I'll talk to people about black and white movies, black and white horror movies, not necessarily universal, but there are tons of other black and white films out there. And most reactions I get from people who are 17 and 18, it's black and white. So it's the older films I don't think seem to get the appreciation from the younger viewers now than I think. Yeah. I think people should really open themselves up to some of that stuff. Even the spoofier ones like Giant Gila Monster or something like that is fun.
Cool. I actually saw there's a huge cathedral around the corner from me and they showed Nosferatu.
Halloween
weekend. So that was cool. The movie was cheesy, but yeah, it was fun to see it.
Yeah, it was 1931. So what could you do?
I'll give him a pass.
Yeah, I actually got a chance to see Creature from the Black Lagoon and Phantom of the Opera on the big screen lately from Fandango.
So. Oh, fun. That's cool.
Yeah, if you get a chance to see some of these classics, I'd recommend your audience actually do open up and look at some of them. They are fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I will try. I'm pretty much mostly favorable to horror movies that were made in like the 90s and forward.
Oh, okay.
But I try to expand my mind every now and then, but just not 80s horror because I don't like 80s horror.
Oh, you don't like the hack and slash stuff?
No, I don't. It's so cheesy and the acting is so bad.
I know, but it can be a little fun. All right, I get it.
if you could remake one horror movie, which one would it be?
Ooh, there are a lot of them out there too. If I could remake a movie, I'd probably want to remake Hellraiser.
How come?
There's so much more you can do with the Cenobites that they don't do. And I mean, well, Barker did quite a bit of work later on and later, a lot of other films. But I still think you could do a lot more with the Cenobites and what they do in the world in general. Because I don't think necessarily that just that girl or the people who are tortured by them one at a time is the whole story of everything. Like, for instance, I'd like to go back and find out where they came from or how they metamorphed into what they were or what their backgrounds were as far as where they live or what the world around them is like. All sorts of stuff like that. I'd love to have to go back and read something like that.
Oh, cool. Did you watch the reboot of Hellraiser that came out?
Right now it's on Hulu and I don't have Hulu, so I'm waiting for it to come to another station that it's not Hulu. It's not Hulu.
Okay, cool. I haven't watched it yet, but I hear interesting things. So
I've heard good and bad reports about it. Yeah. Some people who are classic purists, I should say, are really upset with the girl version of the Hell's Priest. I don't really care if he's a male or a female, although I like the guy who plays him in the regular movies. He does a great job with it. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see what they did with it. Sure, I'd be more than interested. The only time I'll get to be a purist is when situations, in my opinion, are stretched too far. Like, I don't believe there were too many black plantation owners in the 1800s, but Netflix or I forget who came up with Interview with a Vampire decided to make their main character black. The race doesn't bother me. It's the fact that he's a plantation owner. Historically, to me, I don't think it's right that too many black people were actually plantation owners who owned slaves.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've only seen Interview with a Vampire once. So I don't even recall that character. So my last question is, if you had to spend quarantine with one horror villain, who would it be from either a book or a movie?
Oh, horror villain? Oh, that'd have to be Prince Prospero. He'd be a lot of fun.
What's he from?
He's from Masquerade of the Red Death. It's a Roger Corman film. It's done in the 60s. So you're going to find it to be a slightly cheesy because it's Corman. I don't know if you know much about Roger Corman, but he has a lot of fun with his horror movies, but okay. he does a really good job. It's part of a series called the Poe series of movies he did. And yeah, Prospero is he's just got an interesting outlook on life. He's a Satanist. Hmm. He believes in the devil killed God a long time ago. So the devil's the one in charge of the world. And he's also a prince of an entire region. So if you watch him in the movie, you'll see Vincent Price does a fantastic job of portraying him. He's just so much fun. Oh. That he'd come up with so many things that you could do that you wouldn't normally think of doing when you were in lockdown.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I will have to see where I can stream that movie so I can check him out. But thank you so much for being here. Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you online and where they can buy your books?
Definitely. And again, Allison, thank you very much again for having me on your show. I definitely appreciate it. You can find my work on my website, which is www.thedarkcreatures.com. You'll also find some work on my short stories that I've done over the years in case you're interested in seeing what type of genre I write in or how I write, to see if you're interested in buying the book before you do. you can also buy my book at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. All my books are there and wherever other good books are sold, I would assume.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
I appreciate the interview. Thank you very much, Allison. It's always fun talking to people who know the horror genre.
Yeah, totally. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
That's it for this week's episode of Who's There. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Tim Ahrens, and thanks again to Tim for coming on. I'll leave links to his website and where you can buy his books in the show notes. You can follow us on Twitter at Who's There Pod. We're on Instagram at Who's There Podcasts. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, horror movie recommendations, or you'd like to be a guest, shoot us an email at whostherepc@gmail.com. Until next time, stay scary and get boosted.